Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My co-host Anthony Brooks is off today. History has its headliners, the famous and the infamous, about whom many songs, movies, and books will inevitably be made. This is where award-winning novelist Colm McCann begins his work. But then he bores down and deep into lives that aren't so much making history as they are shaped by history. Lives that feel so much more familiar because they are so much more like our own. It's a technique McCann used in his National Book Award-winning novel, Let the Great World Spin. It's set in the moment of an actual event, Philippe Petit's 1974 high-wire walk between the two World Trade Center towers. But as the Boston Globe notes, it's the cast of characters far down below who are hovering in a similar moment of danger and grace. McCann's latest novel is called Transatlantic. It spans more than 150 years, two continents, and three turning points in history: the end of the First World War, the dawn of the American Civil War, and the waning days of the Irish Troubles. Colm McCann will be speaking at the Brattle Theatre in Cambridge tomorrow, but he joins us on Radio Boston now. Colm McCann, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to have you on the program. The book is just so beautifully wrought. I'm going to ask you to read from it in just a little bit. But I thought I might start with just the most basic question. What drew you, or what's at the cause of your obsession with using actual historical events and people in your fiction?
Well, that's exactly it. I think we write towards our obsessions. I said in an interview, you should never trust me in any interview, because I said in an interview about 12 years ago that writing about real people shows a complete and utter failure of the imagination. And here I am now, 12 years later, still haunted by the idea that I'm really interested in this sort of conjunction of the anonymous and the historical, and how real people enter fiction, and how fiction can enter the lives and actually, you know, shape the lives of real people, in the sense that, say, in this novel, I use Frederick Douglass, the great American abolitionist. I also use Senator George Mitchell, and also use the RAF flyers Alcock and Brown, and their respective transatlantic journeys. And some of them were just incredible, but I'm interested in the small moments as well. For example, when Mitchell goes off to negotiate the peace process in Northern Ireland, he has a small baby boy whom he has to say goodbye to, and in fact he has to even change his diaper.
Well, I was wondering, that's actually one of the passages in the book which was so it just resonates so beautifully because of its intimacy. And if you've got it in front of you, I wonder if you could actually just read that passage from the book.
Sure, and I suppose what I was trying to do was just shock the reader in a sense that you know, a man is going off to this to negotiate history and to shape history, as you say, and then but there are all these tiny moments which go into the shaping of history, because even surely Mr. Obama brushed his teeth this morning. At least we hoped he brushed his teeth this morning. and it's really just sort of to try to get to that sort of texture. And Heather is Senator Mitchell's wife. Heather stands in their son's bedroom, hunched over the changing table, hair pulled high to her neck. She does not hear him enter. He remains at the door, watching as she pulls together the Velcro of the diaper. She leans down and she kisses their son's stomach. She undoes her dark hair and leans again over the child, tickling him. A giggle from the baby. The senator remains at the bedroom door until she senses him standing behind her. She says his name, unlatches the child from the changing table, swaddles the boy in a blanket. She laughs and steps across the fine carpet, still carrying the soiled diaper. "You forget something?" she asks. "No." He kisses her, then his son. He pinches the boy playfully on the toes, the roll of soft skin at his fingers, and he takes the diaper, still warm to the touch, and drops it in the pail. Life, he thinks, is still capable of the most extraordinary quips. A warm diaper at 64. Heather watches him, Heather walks him back to the elevator, takes the flap end of his suit jacket and draws him close, the scent of their son on both their fingers. The elevator cables pitch their mourn.
That is Colm McCann reading from his new book, Transatlantic. A beautiful passage, because what parent out there doesn't know, you know, as you said, even the warmth of the diaper and how that brings right. you to a physical proximity to this new life that you've created. And it's especially poignant given the fact that you are writing, your fictional version of George Mitchell, the man who helped broker the peace process in Ireland, Northern Ireland, I should say, who was going back and forth across the ocean trying to bring a peaceful end to a conflict that was centuries long and you know, at the cost of how many, you know, similar parents' children's lives.
That's it. Exactly. And one of the wonderful things about Senator Mitchell is that he knows the length that of the peace process, how many years of peace we have, by looking at his teenage son. So his son Andrew is 15 years old, and he knows now that this process that he helped shape, and many people helped shape, but he was really one of the ones who was absolutely at his fulcrum. I think it's really poignant that he could look at his at what was once his baby boy, and the boy growing up, and the boy eventually becoming a man. Because I suppose that's what we want from any peace process, but especially in Ireland, where, as you know, we've had like 700-800 years of bitterness and rancor, and for a peace process to be born at the end of the 20th century was one of the great Irish stories that there was around.
Right. I wonder, though. I mean, you write about George Mitchell and the end of the Troubles in Ireland. You mentioned Frederick Douglass and his trip to Ireland before the American Civil War. I believe he was only 7 years outside of bondage himself at that time.
That's right.
In roughly 1848. And you also write about the flight of Alcock and Brown, the first transatlantic flight in 1919, although this was not a solo flight. It was done by these two men, and they landed in Ireland. I wonder, I mean, the stories are all so rich in and of themselves, but don't you take something of a risk as a novelist, because these are also all stories that are so well documented? I mean, George Mitchell is still alive. He can speak for himself in his own experience. Frederick Douglass, of course, phenomenally, you know, famous for his writings at the
right.
time. So, I mean, are you thrilled by the risk that you take to
sure.
bring fiction into this realm?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I wanted to do was to talk about taking the war out of the machine. And I was listening to that beautiful report you had there, and with about the invisible wounds of
moral
of war
injury,
and trauma and moral injury and so on. Yes, and it was a fantastic piece, and it sort of put me in mind of the necessity to tell stories over and over and over again, and to become kaleidoscopic with them. There's never one war story. There's never one love story. There's never one angle that we can take on a specific theme. And the more we look at it, the broader we get, the stronger we get, the more muscular we can get in relation to this. And I was interested in these men, first of all, who were taking the war out of the machine. Obviously, Senator Mitchell did it in a very literal way. He goes across and negotiates the peace process. The Alcock and Brown, the flyers who do the first transatlantic flight, they replaced the bomb bays where they dropped the big bombs in World War One. They replaced them with petrol tanks, and they were aware that they were making a huge thing. It was like landing the man on the moon at that stage, and they were doing it was a mission of peace for them, a mission of connection. And then there was of course Douglas, who's trying to take the moral moral war out of the machine, and he's fighting against slavery. He's still a slave when he lands in Ireland at the age of 27, and all of these things were sort of deeply connected for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt I knew I was taking a risk, yes, but then the even bigger risk is that I inserted fictional characters into these non-fiction stories, and that must have been the hard thing for somebody
right.
like Senator Mitchell. Is like, because, you know, he was very good to me. He said, okay, go ahead, And I told him, I said, you know, that I would nix it if he didn't like it. And I worked with his wife, and we got details which a journalist, a normal journalist, would never ask the subject of their story, to make sure, you know, go over this again and again and again to make sure I got it all right. But this was a different process for me.
Right.
But it must have been terrifying for him to think, you know, what sort of fiction is he going to make up around the reality of my life? Yeah. And yes, it was risky.
Well, you mentioned the fact that you interweave fictional characters into these real stories, or real historical moments, I should say. And I'd love it if you could talk to us a little bit about one of them in particular. And that is of a woman named Lily, who's a key figure in the portion of the book where you explore Frederick Douglass's 19th century trip to Ireland.
Thank you so much for bringing Lily up, because Lily was, I was writing about Douglas, and actually Douglas was killing me, and I was having a real hard time with him. And then just one day when I was writing about Douglas climbing the stairs of an opulent Irish house, there was this maid on the stairs, and she just steps back from the light into the shadows, and he goes past her, and I just wrote down that he got a faint whiff of tobacco from her. And I start thinking about that. I just said, she's really interesting. You know, who is she, and what might happen to her? And in fact, then she becomes the focal point of the whole novel, because she leaves Ireland having been influenced by listening to Douglas. And she comes to America on a coffin ship, like so many of our ancestors over here did, and then she goes and becomes a nurse in the American Civil War, and she tries to take the war out of the machine too, but in a different way, and she ends up, in fact, living in Missouri and farming ice, of all things, which I think is a lovely metaphor. I don't know, did they do that in I'm sure they must have done it in Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
To harvest the ice long before there was electricity. It's a beautiful thing, just to cut into the deep ice and then to store it in all these wooden sheds with sawdust and things like that. So she became a fascinating character for me, and I like women. I might get in trouble for that one, but I really do. I like the idea of writing about women characters, and they actually come easier to me than writing about male characters.
Right.
But they're enjoyable.
Well, listeners, I'm speaking with Colm McCann, the award-winning novelist. He won the National Book Award in 2009 for his work Let the Great World Spin. His new novel is Transatlantic, and it is absolutely that. It's a traverse through history and fiction, exploring in new ways the stories of the Irish Troubles, of Frederick Douglass's 19th century trip to Ireland, and the transatlantic flight in 1919 of two pilots called Alcock and Brown, who landed in Ireland. Colm McCann, I mean, just in going through that list, it begs the question, why did you choose these three stories in particular because of their Irish connection? What role does Ireland play in this exploration of history in this novel?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to go home. I'm from Dublin. My folks still live in Dublin. I got brother and sister over there too, and I go home 5-6 times a year. In fact, I'm sort of like one of those commuter generations. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't really gone home in my imagination for quite a while. And in other words, I wanted to write a really Irish novel. You know, about 10 years ago, I stayed with the homeless people in the subway tunnels of New York, and I wrote a book called This Side of Brightness about that and the digging of the tunnels. I wrote a book about a Slovakian gypsy woman. Mm-hmm. I wrote another book called, you know, as you said, Let the Great World Spin, about New York in 1974. It's a sort of 9/11 metaphor. And the defining thing in all of that is that I was always outside of where I came from, and I didn't mind that. I like being outside of where I come from. I don't think an Irish novelist should have to write about Ireland, but it was I got a little bit of what the Portuguese call the saudade, which is a little bit different to homesickness. It's like a longing for something that might not exist anymore, and so I wanted to go back in, and the best way for me to go back in was to go back in, say, in the guise of somebody who fascinated me, you know, in the clothes of and body of someone like Frederick Douglass, who I thought that was an amazing story. And then the other story sort of happened I mean, I wish I could say I had a great plan and knew what I was doing, but mostly I was like flying by the seat of my pants, just saying, oh, okay, what happens next? And now I can see, because you get a consciousness of it sometimes afterwards.
Yeah.
But part of the big lie is that is that writers know what they're doing. Sometimes we just don't know what we're doing. It works like poetry. It's something written down deep in your DNA, and you're dragging it up, and you're hoping that one day it'll make sense. Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't.
Well, Colin McCann, we've got a couple minutes to go here, and I have to ask you about the impact that your writing has had on others. Because, as you mentioned, Let the Great World Spin, your 2009 novel, as you said, is a post 9/11 metaphor. And I was very taken by an article in the New York Times that appeared a couple months ago about the fact that a high school teacher, I believe, from Newtown, Connecticut, reached out to you after the horrific tragedy there and said that your novel, Let the Great World Spin, was a lifeline for this teacher. And they invited you to Newtown to speak to some of the high school students there. Can you tell us what that experience was like?
It was incredible. It was one of the most touching moments of my life, and it still gives me the chills to even think that first of all, that this teacher Lee Keelock would recognize a notion that's been very important for me for a long time, is that literature matters and our stories matter, you know, and our lives are valuable, and sometimes we can negotiate things through good poetry or good fiction or good playwriting or good journalism, good radio, whatever it happens to be, and that these art forms truly matter. And he took my book and he invited me to come up and talk to the kids, and I was a bit terrified because I went up there thinking I'd have to say things to them and make sense of things for them. But they'd read the book, and the book was enough for them to say things to me. And I was the one who ended up listening for hours on end to these beautiful kids who were 16, 17, 18, who'd been traumatized again in the most extraordinary way, violated, and you know, many of them had a direct connections to the people who'd been killed and the children who'd been killed. Others had babysat for them. Others played on refereed soccer games where the kids had played. Devastating things. But these kids, there have been difficult times for them, but one of the common denominators is they all acknowledged that they'd seen the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
But really what they wanted to do is see if they could find a little bit of light. And I think they did. It was an extraordinary thing to be involved in.
Well, Colin McCann's latest novel is Transatlantic. It's a luminous thing and a beautiful journey. Colin McCann, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Well, I should also say, listeners, that Colin McCann will be appearing tomorrow in Cambridge at the Brattle Theatre. There's more information at our website, radio.boston.org. And that's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.